Hi everyone, I just wanted to let you know that we recently upgraded our software and there seems to be a bit of a problem with the recording on my vocal track, so it's a little bit echoey and maybe a bit distracting. I apologize, I am working on a fix and hopefully it'll only affect another episode or two.
That's a great superpower though.
Fart ventriloquism?
Welcome to Geeks Without God with Nick Glover, Tim Wick, and Molly Glover.
We're geeks, we're geeks, we're geeks without God, we're geeks. We don't recognize moral authority. We don't accept divine superiority. We're geeks, geeks without God.
This week on Geeks Without God, we are talking about the presumed outcome of the 2024 election. Maybe Joe Biden got elected. I mean, probably Joe Biden got elected, but who the fuck knows?
We're geeks, we're geeks, we're geeks without God. We're geeks, we're geeks, we're geeks without God. We're geeks, geeks without God.
Welcome to Geeks Without God. I'm your host, Molly Glover, joined as always by my co-hosts, Nick Glover.
That's me.
And Tim Wick.
Yay! Biden Harris 2020.
And today, we have claimed for electoral purposes that Geeks Without God is going to be very happy that Biden Harris won the election.
I'm not very happy
that Trump lost.
Very happy that Trump lost, yes. Considering those were our two options, I think that makes the default happy that Biden Harris won.
Yeah.
I know. You know what? Let's wait till after January to start tearing him down. I think let's just have a very delicate few days here while we try to get this shit sorted.
I'm trying.
I know. But we're going to talk about the United States election, mostly the presidential election, but we will touch on a few of the other races because they're all kind of tied together in this, boy, I mean, shitstorm.
Quagmire.
Situation we find ourselves in.
I know. What's amazing to me is you know, we're recording this episode a little bit ahead of time, a week ahead of time, and by the time it goes up, who the fuck knows where we're going to be?
Yeah, I will say that you probably don't need us to recap what happened in the American election, but long story short, Biden currently has enough electoral votes to win, assuming that all of the electoral people actually, or electors actually cast their votes as their states voted, and assuming that nothing gets overturned, which is mostly what I want to talk about today. So Trump is, as I'm sure everybody knows, even around the world, launching dozens and dozens of lawsuits to try to stop voting counting, to try to make certain ballots invalidated, which is, to me, particularly ridiculous considering Republicans did very well across the board except for in the presidential race.
I mean, you could argue that they even did well in the presidential race because Trump also got more votes than any other Republican presidential candidate in our nation's history.
Yeah. They had record turnout.
He got, you know, it was close in a couple states, like really, really close, where just a small percentage of the right people in the right places voting a different way, and Trump could have won.
It's going to be less than 20,000 in Georgia.
Yep.
One way or the other, probably for Biden, but still, it's going to be less than 20,000 in Georgia. It's going to be probably somewhere around 100,000 in Pennsylvania.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be less than 10,000 in Arizona. One way or the other.
And right now, Arizona is called for Biden, right? Or that one's called for Trump.
Arizona was called for Biden by a couple of networks, but a bunch of other networks didn't.
Last I saw, that was still in the who knows category.
They're still counting, and there are still enough votes for Trump to win, and he's been gaining. So when he talks about stopping the count, it's everywhere but Arizona.
Right.
And it's worth noting that, honestly, Biden doesn't need all of these states.
No.
He really only needs one, maybe two, depending on the states, right? And also, it's worth noting that in every time we've ever had recounts in the history of the United States, they've never uncovered more than a few hundred miscast ballots or problematic ballots that got thrown out, overturned. Never was it enough to flip an election. And it's not, especially with the presidential race. Those
it's
of
also
us who
worth
were...
noting that the amount of fraud, like the total number of fraudulent ballots that have been discovered in the history of our nation, are less than a few thousand.
Yeah. So it's really
So the number of ballots that would have to be fraudulent for Biden to lose are astronomical. And if you know the process, basically impossible.
It's statistically impossible, but I mean,
there's a reason that the AP and everybody waited this long to call it for Biden. There's a reason it took until Saturday morning, even though it looked like starting on about Wednesday, he was probably going to take it.
Yeah.
It's because they wait until there is basically a mathematical impossibility.
Right.
That is what they wait for, so that they can say, okay, even if, you know, the rest of the ballots that come in are all for Trump, even if, you know, everything else we find goes that way, it won't matter. Then that's when they call it. And I find it very funny to hear all these people now saying, and they're all Republicans or they're all Trump cult members saying, well, the media doesn't call elections, the courts do. And it's like, that's not true.
Yeah, that's not,
the
yeah.
courts don't get involved unless it gets, it's so close that they involve the courts.
So, I mean, the electors have to cast their vote in the Electoral College and that gets certified. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, technically that hasn't happened yet. And
true.
That could, they can vote any way they want with
true.
The exception of the states that have, passed laws that say how their electors have to vote.
But historically and empirically, they don't flip. They aren't faithless. Like, that's not part of, I mean, that would be a coup of proportions. That means that we have a problem that is much bigger than anything that we have dealt with before.
Yeah.
Honestly, that would be a fundamental undermining of the way our government works.
That
yes.
is probably
so,
the least
shocking.
Likely thing to happen.
Yes.
Yeah, the states have to certify the results first. So the counting's not done. I mean, that's the really important thing about this. It's like what a lot of people don't seem to realize is counting mail-in ballots takes time because they have to verify every single one when it comes in. They have to go, all right, did this person cast their ballot in person? In which case, it invalidates this mail-in ballot. So you can't vote twice. As much as people are like, oh, well, people could vote twice if they mail in a ballot and then they show up. No, they can't. Because the first thing they do is make sure that you didn't vote in person in validating your mail-in ballot. They got to make sure.
In-person supersedes everything else.
Yeah.
Right.
So they got to verify that the ballot counts. They have to look at the ballot, determine that it has not been ruined in some way, verify the information that is on the ballot matches the person who says they're voting, and then they can count the vote. So it takes time, and that's one of the reasons it's taken so long for states to certify. Plus, there are mandatory recounts. Georgia has a mandatory recount if it's less than 0.5%. Between the two candidates, which it's going to be. So we know that Georgia is going to a recount, which means they're not going to call that state or certify the election until a recount has happened.
Now, it's worth noting that all has to happen by December 12th, including all court cases and all litigation that's involving with it. Everything has to, this is what happened in 2000. Those of us who were old enough to vote then remember that it took until then. It took until then before the courts made their decision and Al Gore conceded.
Right,
and so, but the thing is, everyone's like, oh, we may never know the results. Like, that's not how it works. It's also worth noting that in some states, you're allowed to cure your ballot, which is a process by which if your ballot gets received and it's a mail-in or absentee ballot, which functionally mail-in and absentee is the same thing. There's some very slight discrepancies in what that means
in
for your state.
Yeah.
But some states let you cure your ballot, which is if they receive it and your signature is wrong or missing, or you marked it with X's instead of filling in the ovals or whatever, they will contact you and give you the opportunity to fix it.
They might not contact you.
They might not. They might just put it online.
Right.
And you have to check it yourself. But that is considered contacting.
Yeah. In Minnesota, if you vote absentee or mail-in, you can, you know, put in all your information and your last for your social or your driver's license ID, whatever you used. And they will tell you when it's been sent, when it's been received, and that your ballot has been counted or rejected or what?
That's all before, in Minnesota, it's all before election day and everything, like up until the end of
the polls. With the exception of the last part. Right. Yes. Your ballot doesn't get counted until election day.
Yeah. We don't actually have a cure process the way other people do. That's actually a rejection and then your revote.
Yes.
The curing is more like they do actually reach out to you and say, hey, your ballot you need to do something to fix it. And I've been reading about that in some states. So there are some states where they're going through that process. Yeah. As well,
pretty much every state that hasn't been called, they have that kind of process.
Yeah, and it's funny to me that the party that tends to be all about states' rights, and that every state should get to choose how it wants to do itself, and they should govern themselves in that way, is now bitching that these states have chosen how to govern themselves and they have different rules and they have longer wait periods than other states and it's not fair. And it's just, I am constantly amazed. You'd think you couldn't be amazed anymore after 4 years, but I'm consistently amazed at how the GOP manages to like believe, want everything at once, you know? And it's, you know, it's such an obvious power grab that to say that votes that are for me are good and votes that aren't for me are illegal. Mm-hmm. It's so transparent.
Well, I mean, and Trump has been setting this up for months.
Yeah.
He's been talking about how mail-in ballots are easy to be fraudulent. Whether or not he knew that he was likely to lose the election, I think he more wanted to set it up that if it was close, he could use that as a way, along with the Supreme Court that he now has stacked with three appointees, mm-hmm. to work it through the courts. So if it was close, he could win. And the thing is that's interesting here. I mean, there's a lot of stuff that is uncertain, but what is fairly certain is he doesn't have any challenges that are really going to be affecting more than a few hundred votes.
They've all been thrown out too.
Yeah.
Every single one of his cases that's gone before a judge has been dismissed, thrown out.
Or will be
because they don't have any evidence of anything now.
Right. Yeah. So, you know, even if it ends up only being 40,000 votes in Pennsylvania, which it won't, it'll be more than that. There aren't 40,000 votes he can get back.
No.
And the worst the Supreme Court would do is probably rule that Pennsylvania has to do a recount. They've got a mandatory recount at 0.5%. Biden's going to win by more than that.
Mm-hmm.
So there's no mandatory recount. About the worst that he could probably get the Supreme Court to do, even stacked in his favor, the worst that he can probably get the Supreme Court to do is rule that Pennsylvania has to do a 100% recount.
Right.
Well, so right now, Trump's lawsuit in Pennsylvania is asking for an emergency order to prohibit them from certifying the results of the general election in Pennsylvania for, you know, reasons, whatever. The Pennsylvania Secretary of State is asking the judge to just throw it out because it's bullshit.
And it probably will. And I think another point to make is that what Trump's doing is with his campaign literature that he's doing right now is getting people to donate to him.
Yes.
And in the thing, like in the fine print at the bottom, and he's talking about donate to help us with all these lawsuits. But in the fine print, it says it's also going to help us offset debts from the campaign.
Half of it. Yeah.
So
yeah, Nick has an alt account that gets all the Trump emails, and it has been like starting on election night, but it got so much worse on Wednesday.
Desperate,
like 10 to 12 emails a day, saying things like, you know, like this, you know, this is your final notice. Like, why don't you love the president? Like, why do you hate America? You know, all that stuff, just like super jingoistic and really aggressive.
It's great because so my practice has been, I have this shit email alias that I use for anything that's going to get a lot of spam. It's what I used in the past to sign up for Trump rallies to get tickets to them to inflate numbers and then not go because I think that's mm-hmm. hilarious.
Mm-hmm. It's super funny.
So I used to get a ton of Trump mail there up to just a couple days ago when I went through it all and marked every single piece of it as spam.
Nice.
So I, they are, the practice is to actually open the emails and make sure the pictures load for a second, because depending on how they've linked the HTML embedded images, they can actually tell when someone has opened an email or not and looked at it. So I'd make sure to look at them all. And so, you know, they were,
they could tell you, you were reading their pleas and you didn't even care.
Did not care.
So, something that happened, breaking about an hour before we recorded tonight is that, so Project Veritas sought people and offered money to anybody who had evidence of election fraud.
$25,000
Especially in Pennsylvania, since it's obvious that Pennsylvania is the kicker, right?
Project Veritas is a conservative organization looking to,
they are
find ways to get Trump elected.
With a history of, I mean, they worked a lot with Jacob Wall. They are renowned for making crazy and verifiably false claims.
Yeah.
Are they the ones that did about the Planned Parenthood video? Or is that?
Yes.
Okay. Yep.
They're also related to the gentleman who they recorded out of context saying that he was harvesting ballots for Ilhan Omar in Minneapolis. And, you know, look at all these ballots. It's just cash for ballots and all that. They do this a lot. They'll hold press conferences and make outrageous claims. They're very, very easily disproven.
If you care to disprove them.
Right. Exactly. That's it. It doesn't matter if what they're claiming is false or not, because there's enough chaff.
It gets disproven, but Project Veritas, they actually are very cunning. They know that getting the headline out there is all that matters, because then in people's conversations, what they say is, oh, no, didn't you know Project Veritas proved that this guy did this? And people will go, oh, my God, I didn't know that. And no one even checks, right? And so, ironically, Project Veritas, very not Veritas-y, they found this guy. This guy came forward. He works for the United States Postal Service. He said that he witnessed his supervisor throwing out ballots, like tampering with ballots in Pennsylvania, and did a sworn affidavit and all this stuff. And when the IG started investigating it, the news has broken that he completely recanted his story. Completely. Said he made it up. Said he did it for the money. Like, and that it was all, that it was untrue, and he has no evidence of it.
Now, it was an affidavit, so.
It was a sworn affidavit, but you can't.
For the USPS, so not only is it a felony, it is a federal felony.
Now, you can technically recant your testimony in those cases, I believe, without there being a penalty. I think the most you can get him for is perjury or something, but because it is, I mean, as long as you recant, there's a lot of like, just say your sorries.
It's entirely possible that the prosecutor sat the dude down in a room and said, okay, this is bullshit. Here's how we know it's bullshit. You have two choices.
Yeah.
You can recant your testimony, or you're going to go to jail for 10 years for perjury.
Right.
So you make the call here. You decide.
So that was their biggest smoking gun.
Yeah.
That was the biggest thing that people were like, oh shit, this guy might have actual credible. And granted, it's still just hearsay. Like, even he said, this is the only person who claimed to be an eyewitness, and it's already been like, everything else is hearsay. Every other witness has come forward saying they heard someone say that they saw something, which is not admissible evidence.
Especially if you don't even know who the person is. It's like,
You do.
Yeah.
If I go to court and I say, I heard Tim say he murdered someone.
Right.
That is not admissible evidence. It's hearsay.
But if I go to the cops and I say, I heard Tim say something, the cops can come to me.
They can come to you
and they can see if I actually said that.
But that's not admissible in court.
That's not admissible in court. They got to get me into court. I have to go to court, not you saying I said it.
Even if you were on trial, Tim, they couldn't use me as a prosecutor, as a witness.
Right.
And if they did, the judge would throw out my testimony because I didn't. Yeah.
But it's Trump's whole MO. I mean, from day one, he's been saying, well, you know, people are saying this, and I've been hearing that, and everyone knows this, and it's just more of that. It's just more of this flooding everything with the fake bullshit.
Yep.
And never backing down.
It's a signal to noise ratio.
Yep.
Yeah.
It gets ruined.
Yep.
And so, then he doesn't back down on it, which is right. which is the trick, right? You know, as long as you say lies and then don't backpedal, or as long as you say terrible things about people and you don't apologize, then nobody cares because you've already moved on to the next lie or the next terrible thing so fast that they're just trying to keep up. That's what he was doing with the press for the last 4 years. That's why it was super impressive. He did a press conference on Wednesday night where he was railing against how the election was fraud, and the networks cut him off.
Yeah,
like, even Fox, even fucking Fox News was like, okay, nothing here he's saying is factual. Nothing he's saying here is accurate. We're just going to cut away from him. Which
they
is
didn't
what
they cut away from
doing.
Him, but they cut away from Kayleigh McEnany the other day, but they didn't cut away from the president yet. They just refused. Well,
some stations have.
Other stations did, yes.
Yeah.
And when he does get busted, or when someone else in his administration or like a Republican senators get asked or confronted about this stuff, then it gets passed off as a joke or clearly he was kidding. And that's kind of what's happening with Mike Pompeo, Secretary of State right now, who today in a press conference was asked about a smooth and nonviolent transfer of power to the Biden administration, and he promised a smooth transition to a second Trump administration.
Yeah,
and he kind of laughed a little, and then he went on to talk about voter fraud and how this isn't over yet, and everyone's like, look, the Secretary of State is clearly saying that, you know, he's just going to hand the reins over to the president again for 4 more years. And right away, other Republicans are like, oh, but he laughed. It's a joke. Ha ha.
Isn't it fun when the Secretary of State makes silly jokes about transitions of power?
And I think the thing that's really dangerous is there are some national security implications for all of this. It's like, if Trump is if he loses, which he's never going to concede, right? But if the Electoral College meets, elects Biden, as it should, okay, Trump is no longer the president as of January 21st. As soon as Biden's inaugurated, Trump is no longer the president. The Secret Service and the U.S. Marines will escort him out of the White House.
Yep.
Because it doesn't matter their politics. That's treason. And they're not going to do it. They are loyal to the office, not to the person. And we have a few friends in the military who've been saying, yeah, it doesn't matter their politics. They would not allow Trump to remain president if the Electoral College says somebody else has been elected. But assume all that happens. Assume Trump refuses to do anything as far as a transfer of power until Biden takes office. Assume Trump refuses to concede. Assume they have to force him out of office. What that means is for like several days, Biden has not received any security briefings until he becomes the official president of the United States.
Yeah,
Biden has not
happening.
Had an opportunity to put anybody who is anything but loyal to Trump into any positions of power. And Trump is already replacing people in Defense Department. So Biden suddenly becomes unable to handle any national security situations for about the first 2 weeks while he's undoing all the damage Trump did getting out of office.
Right.
Because Trump hasn't recognized him as the winner. Yeah, he's not getting security briefings.
Yeah, he's not.
12 years ago today, there are all these pictures of Bush welcoming Obama to the White House and them meeting and talking about the transfer of power and making sure that he's briefed on everything.
And
4 years ago today, there's pictures of Obama and Trump sitting side by side in the fucking White House as Obama started getting him in the loop on everything to take over.
Honestly, even more telling is that, you know, in a more analogous situation, when George Bush Sr. was a one-term president who was replaced by a Democratic candidate, he lost with grace. He conceded. You can find it on the internet. He wrote a very nice letter saying that, like, you know, our politics are different, but we have one thing in common, and that's that we believe in the American people and the American democracy and what the country is. And then, you know, none of that is happening now because he's so fucking childish. And moving from it sounds insane to say this, but we are moving from the less crazy to the more crazy. During the protests, a bunch of people surrounded the Capitol, and these are the evangelical Christians. For some reason, have decided that Trump is their God. They surrounded the Capitol. And then they circled it seven times while praying and chanting, because that's the number of times that it took to, like, defeat Jericho. Like, there was like seven attacks or seven blasts from the horn.
They had to walk around Jericho seven times.
Yeah, they had to walk around Jericho seven times.
And the walls fell after the seventh time.
And the walls came a-tumbling down. Yeah. And so, like, they think they're doing that. There was a guy dressed as Jesus. They had, like, I mean, they did all kinds of, I mean, to be frank, fairly insane stuff, like witchcraft kinds of stuff that, yeah, like, Christians usually don't think are, like, magical thinking things. Also, we've talked a lot about QAnon on this podcast. The QAnon supporters are losing their fucking minds.
It's weird, actually.
Because they were told, there was a quote from one woman in the Washington Post that was just, did we get conned? because not only that, Q has been silent ever since before the election. So there's been no information, no drops, no messages, no posts. The two dudes who run 8kun, which is what used to be 8chan, which is the shitty racist message board where all of this QAnon stuff basically lives. Those dudes have, one of them said he was stepping away from the board for health reasons and to help save his marriage or whatever. So he stepped away. The other guy who is his father, is like fucking MIA. No one's heard from him.
And these are the folks that were outed as, you know, being Q or running
this. That's what they claim. They still say that, but the thing is, they're the only two people who are able to verify that the drops actually come from Q based on the complicated numerical chain they have or whatever. Right. Uh-huh. So, like, people are panicking. They're like, Q's abandoned us. Like, and a lot of other people are like, trust in the plan. You know, you got to stay back off the ledge. You got to believe this is just a mirage to make Trump look even stronger. And it's like, there's going to be some significant cognitive dissonance when the Electoral College meets and this is officially 100% called.
With that, I mean, have you even seen all the stuff about the Trump supporters who are giving up on Fox News?
So many
people on Fox, even Fox News, are saying, like, look, Trump lost.
Trump lost.
Fucking Tucker Carlson was like, even with as much fraud as there is, it's not enough for Biden to lose. And then he went on to talk a bunch more about how much fraud there was. Yeah. But even Tucker Carlson's like saying Trump lost.
Right.
And so all these people are losing their minds and being like, I'm unsubscribing from Fox News and I'm done with you and blah, blah, blah. And they're doing the same with Twitter and Facebook for actually starting to almost hold the president accountable for his words and tweets.
Yeah.
They're all fleeing for Parler.
New super right wing social media site that says no censorship ever.
No censorship. You can say whatever you want here with no consequences.
Unless the FBI sees you say something like a terroristic threat. I don't know. The thing is that they don't have, aside from Trump losing, this election was pretty good for Republicans.
The
Democrats did not retake the Senate.
Not yet.
At best, if the Democrats can take the two runoffs in Georgia, which is going to be very, very hard. Mm-hmm. Historically speaking, Democrats do not do well in runoffs in Georgia. I'm not saying it can't happen. I'm saying it's going
to
be very, very hard.
But if that happened, it would be 51-49.
It would be 50-50.
It would be
50-50 with Kamala Harris being basically the most powerful vice president in the history of our nation.
I forgot it was 40. I'm thinking of the House where we still had the slightest lead.
The House, the Democrats still have a slight lead, but The Republicans took over a whole bunch of state houses where they're going to be gerrymandering when the new districting plans come out, mm-hmm. which means it's going to be a lot harder for the Democrats to hold the House unless they can figure out how to actually get their message to a larger swath of the American people. Because right now, they basically, their message is working in urban centers and it's not working in rural centers, and they need to get some of that rural vote to have any chance moving forward. It's like, so... And the Republicans still control the Supreme Court, right? So there's
well, what's crazy. Technically, the Supreme Court is not partisan.
Yeah, whatever.
So you have to say conservative or liberal. You can't say Republican or Democrat. They're not tied to parties.
They still control the Supreme Court.
They have a majority.
And the thing
it
is
seems
that,
like that's how they'll vote.
The thing is that the Republicans did way better than anybody expected, right? There was expected to be a massive blue wave this year, and it did not materialize, which is super disappointing if you're a liberal, because, you know, boy, if the Democrats could have controlled the Senate, they could have made some shit happen. And you know that McConnell's basically going to obstruct for the next 2 years.
Yeah.
And longer.
It's stupid to me that anyone was like, there was a huge blue wave expected, and there was nothing that the Republicans were going to do in response to that news being talked about for the last 2 months. Like, if you think there's going to be a blue wave, shut your fucking mouth about it. That's what I say. Why are we Democrats are constantly fucking talking such a huge game about polling numbers and everything else. Oh, we're going to do so great. We're going to do so great. And as a result, Democrats get complacent and Republicans get fired up. And so it is frustrating to me that people that we hear so much and people talk so much about polls, even after we saw what happened in 2016.
Yeah.
And it's funny because these polls being wrong, Trump is using that as reason why he's calling that voter suppression, that the polls saying that Biden was going to win by 18 points was somehow suppressing Republican votes. Which to me is like opposite day, because you'd think if you heard your opponent was up, you'd be like, well, fuck me. I better get out there and vote then.
Right?
The opposite voter instigation, right?
Yeah. I mean, the only place you should be talking about voter suppression is in Georgia, because the reason that Georgia narrowly flipped blue is because there are organizations in Georgia that have been working their asses off to get disenfranchised voters registered.
Stacey Abrams has been doing actually did the work, like not just like, oh, she talked a lot about people needed to vote. She like rolled up her sleeves and did it herself with the help of multiple
100,000 new voters registered
with the help of multiple other black women.
800,000
new voters, mostly people of color.
Over 2 years,
And black people won Georgia for Biden, almost certainly. Yep. Assuming it stays, black people won Georgia for Biden. And if we can take the two Senate seats in Georgia, it's going to be black people that are going to win those Senate seats. I mean, no question.
From an atheist perspective, obviously things didn't go very well for us because there are a lot more Jesus-loving, even the Democrats that won are all very, you know, solid Christian values and all that. But from a queer friendly side of things, there were lots of gains made in that ground. Lots of first black men, gay men, first transgender, in different sections, mostly a lot of times in state legislature, but still gains were made there. I will say that the religious craziness surrounding Trump is getting to a fever pitch. If you haven't been paying attention as an atheist or agnostic, you should be paying attention. Google Michelle Bachmann right now if you want to see the video. She has gone full nut job. She's repeating herself over and over like some kind of prayer, like begging God to smash Biden with his iron rod. Like is that a televangelist we saw that was like speaking in tongues on election night? Like being like, we need they are losing it.
Yeah.
And you know, we talked about that show, The Family, which again, if you haven't watched The Family on Netflix, now is a very good time to do so, because it really talks about why evangelicals are behind Trump and why they are so fanatical about this loss and what it means. Because for a lot of them, it means that they're their whole prophecy is falling apart.
Yeah.
Which is, that is something, as we all know, when a cognitive dissonance comes into play, when someone's faith and religion is shaken by actual events, it can be really messy.
It can be dangerous.
It can be dangerous. Mm-hmm. And we're about to see, you know, something like, you know, 44% of the country going through that dangerous cognitive dissonance of like, but I thought he was God. I thought he was chosen by God. If he isn't chosen by God, how did he lose? And this shit about the Democrats being blood drinking Satanists who are all into child pedophilia and everything isn't going away.
No.
And those people think they have the right of it. And us, the Democrats winning only solidifies their deep state thoughts on that shit.
And Trump's not going to go away either. He's not going to stop tweeting. He easily could consider a run in 4 years.
If he's not in prison.
I mean, fingers crossed, Twitter just takes away his, just deletes him like they did Steve Bannon.
That's the thing, is that the only reason Trump basically still has a Twitter account is because he's a world leader.
Yeah.
As
soon as he's not a world leader, he's held to the same rules as everyone else.
Especially given that lately they've been putting almost everything he tweets behind a fact check because it's all the lie. It's all false. And that's pissing conservatives off. You know, what gets me a lot of this is, like, they're all like, well, it's a conspiracy. I'm like, well, if the Democrats are going to conspire to take the White House, wouldn't they have conspired to take the Senate as well? Don't you think they could have pulled off both?
What's so funny when they talk about, like, how this election is rigged. It's like, so, like, I guess, fuck you, down ticket Republicans. You couldn't have won.
Well, and like, Democrats are the secret deep state that control everything, but also they're incompetent and can't govern. It's like, well, hang on a second. Which is it?
Because
are they secretly pulling the strings and running everything, you know, from behind the scenes, or are they fucking jokes who can't get a job done?
Yeah. And it's like, well, I've seen a few people like, well, if the Democrats stole this election, that's treason, that's sedition. They should all be in prison. I'm like, yeah, but isn't Trump trying to steal the election right now? And if he actually succeeds, and even if he fails, isn't that also treason?
Right? Yeah.
It's like,
no, so, because it's rules for thee, but not for me.
Right.
That's their whole thing. Their whole thing. It's, they're against abortion until their mistress needs one or their daughter needs one. Right. They're
against gun control unless people of color want to arm themselves.
Yeah, exactly. It is the most hypocritical. And
they're
to be honest,
gay marriage, but they still go to gay prostitutes.
Yeah, and it is the most frustrating, I think, time in the world to be a very logical person who hates hypocrisy and who has, I feel like I went through so much cognitive behavioral therapy to learn to identify cognitive dissonance that seeing people just get away with it is just, it makes me insane. And it's such a hard thing to listen to. And if there's one thing I'm looking forward to, it's a president who at least has the decency to lie in ways that are like normal. Does that sound right? You know what I mean? Like, just not this like insane lying where it's like, we have a video of you saying it. And he's like, that's fake news. And it's like, it's a video of you saying it. I saw it happen live.
Yeah, I mean, I think when a lot of normal politicians lying comes down to different interpretations of facts that can be differently interpreted.
Sure.
Or choosing this statistic over this statistic.
Exactly.
Even though you should be considering both.
I'm looking at the mean. You're looking at the median. We're both right.
Yeah.
You know. Yeah.
But Trump just constantly spews stuff that has no support in fact. There's not a way to look at it that makes it correct.
No, he just makes it up.
And
anyway,
he does.
Well,
so,
thanks for listening to us.
Hope.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm hoping that maybe by the time this airs, there's been more definitive results. But I honestly think we're going to be white knuckling it until December when we actually do get to the final deadline for courts and when the Electoral College does meet. Believe me, I am looking forward to that date as much, if not more, than the January inauguration date. I do have faith that this incredibly stupid coup is not going to be able to happen. In case, I would say that between that and the rising coronavirus numbers, if you live in the United States, you should be preparing to shelter in place for a variety of reasons.
Yeah.
And maybe just make sure that you've got everything you need in terms of food, water, supplies. Just
stock up on
everything.
Take
a first aid course. You can take some online, you know, just all that stuff. Just get yourself ready for
all
anything.
Which is more important than having a gun.
I think it depends on who you are.
I'm not saying don't get a gun. I'm just saying there's
no first aid is.
There are tons of ways to prepare for a variety of problems in the world.
I would say if you're going to own a gun, you should sure as shit know first aid.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
At the very least.
So we have five questions that are very timely. And,
five questions.
And actually, I've been kind of holding them back purposefully to wait for this election, a wrap-up episode. There are five questions from Skeptic Jackal.
Who does not
live in the United States. So as a non-United States person, as a citizen of the world, I think he told us what his country is, but I don't remember.
South America.
I believe it. Yeah. Brazil. Anyway, Argentinian.
Argentina.
He's an Argentinian. So he has five questions for us that are U.S. policy based. And I think I was just going to dive into them.
We
are you
know
ready?
All about Argentina because of Evita. So.
Oh, that's set. Good. I'm sure that's yes. Okay. Yeah. All right. So question one. The United States have a very interventionist history up until recently, disrupting the political process of any country where they can obtain a benefit, be it political in the form of politicians helping U.S. companies to get control of local, private, or public companies, or a natural resource they are interested in. These actions have led to the ruin or the economic or political dependencies of many countries. Given this, should America honestly expect empathy from other countries when it suffers any serious crisis? That's a long question for me to just say no to.
Well, okay. So I can see reasons why yes.
Because they're better than us.
Beyond just not retaliating, you know, for not wishing shitty things on people, even though they were shitty.
Sure.
And that is that the United States has a lot of influence on the economy and world, say military action around the world, let's say. And
global
even though
stocks.
We are a problem in that second category as well, I think that a stable America is, for the majority of the world, a more stable world.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, you know, like maybe bombing hospitals and shit is not included in that stability. It's an average.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, there's reasons to want America to be stable and well, and that's that, you know, President Trump doesn't have the fucking nukes.
I would say my answer is no, because I don't think we should expect empathy. I don't think we should expect anything. I think that do we deserve empathy? I think everyone deserves empathy. Yeah. That's different. But should we expect it? I understand that especially the citizens of the countries, not necessarily the governments. So I think, Nick, you make a good point about how the governments of other countries are invested in keeping us stable. Mm-hmm. From a citizen point of view, I can understand them really, to be honest, having Schadenfreude at us fucking it up and having problems.
Sure. I think, I think about, like, you could say the same thing in that question about China, right? But, you know, the question is, do the Chinese people deserve empathy when there's, say, a fucking tsunami that takes out a coastal city or whatever horrible disaster might happen? Absolutely. Does the country itself deserve empathy? Well, that's a more difficult question. And should they expect it? Not necessarily. I mean, nobody should. It is right to feel empathy for anybody that suffers a horrible disaster. You know, I think.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, should the United States expect other countries, that have been oppressed by our actions to feel empathy when we suffer? I mean, no, I wouldn't expect it, but
yeah,
I do think.
Okay.
Yeah.
Question two. If you were given the chance to rule your country, would you make any changes in foreign policy to stop the predation of other countries as described in the first question?
Hell no.
So basically, would you be an interventionist?
Boy, rule is an ominous.
So let's say you're the president. So to some degree, it is a bit up to you. You're the president. Are you an interventionist president? I think is really what the question is asking.
I can send troops into any nation I want, right? You know, I don't have to wait.
We'll say that you can.
Yeah. I mean, technically, no, I'm not going to send troops into England, but if I wanted to, I could bomb the shit out of North Korea and nobody's going to bat an eye.
The question is, like, let's say there's a Middle Eastern or South American country that appears to be having some sort of uprising. And are you going to involve yourself? Let's say one side is asking. They're like, America, please, like, we need money to help support our side.
Am I going to stop a socialist from being elected in Bolivia?
Yeah, kind of. I mean, that's kind of the question, right? Like, are you going to help a socialist get elected in Bolivia?
I think that the United States should, as much as possible, limit its interference in other countries to humanitarian things. And that can include education. And a great deal of education and a rise in quality of life will fix a lot of those problems. You can fix the cause of a lot of those problems. I mean, sanctioning countries can seriously fuck them up and make violence worse.
Yep.
Make
everything worse.
I think the big, you know, let's go, if we're going with a hypothetical, go with another hypothetical. What if I know a leader that's coming up in a country is literally going to be worse than Hitler as far as.
Yeah. Let's say he's promised genocide.
Yeah. He's going to kill more people than Hitler in his own country. You know, would I have a moral obligation if I knew that to be true to stop it? The answer.
What if he hadn't done it yet? You just knew that he wanted to.
Right. That's a difficult question.
Now we got some minority stuff.
I can say, I don't know. I'm not in that position. I don't have that information. Would I want to do something different? Yeah, absolutely. Because basically every time we've gone into a country to make things better, we haven't.
Yeah.
And I would be like talking about, well, once we get rid of this asshole, because I know we can do that, what's our plan? And we better have a really clear plan that's like spelled out and budgeted and ready to go as soon as we get rid of this asshole.
Yep.
Because if we don't have that, then it doesn't matter. Everything else is useless.
What we talked about last week with Charlie Wilson's War, how someone trying to do good basically led to 9/11, right? Like someone who thought he was doing the right thing at the time. But yeah, exactly. So like my answer is also a complicated, I don't know. One of the things I remember learning about the isolationist policies during the late 30s and early 40s that America had, and how even though we saw these atrocities happening in Europe, we saw what was happening and said that we wouldn't get involved. I always felt like when you see it's happening, you get involved. But if it's just like, oh, I think it might happen, I understand why you wouldn't. But then you ask yourself, to what point does it is and how do you balance if you're doing it right or not? And it's
well, and like there are other things you can do too, like taking refugees.
Yep. Yep.
Right. Which we, as a part of that, shutting off the country in the 30s,
we did not want to take any refugees at all.
And so, a lot of loss of human life there.
I think there are ways to be, I guess, interventionist in a sense that don't involve sending the military to be there permanently.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think that we don't really tend to investigate those ways because we have spent the last five decades, putting all of our money into the military industrial complex and not into other ways. We don't have a brigade of teachers that we can deploy to help a country.
We're not equipped to rebuild after we destroy.
And that's the thing. And I think that if what we had was doctors, you know, American doctors who were like the National Guard, but their job was to go places and doctor, that would be a different thing. But
if you're going to go in and save people from genocide, you can't just save them and leave.
Exactly.
You haven't saved them. You haven't saved them yet.
And so, honestly, question three is whatever your answer to number two, why? And I feel like we've covered that.
Yeah,
pretty
I feel
well.
Like we went through that. Yeah.
It was a bit of a two-parter there. But so now question four, the image of the typical U.S. citizen is more or less what's known as the ugly American. But asked about it, most people don't recognize themselves in that stereotype. Do you think that the ugly American stereotype is fair or a mere exaggeration by detractors?
Both.
And the ugly American, just in case people, because everyone in high school, at least in my high school, who didn't read the book, got very confused and did book reports about how ugly he was. You should know it's not, I'm not kidding. You can always tell if someone actually read the book, The Ugly American, or if their report is like, because he was ugly, he was ostracized and no one would talk to him because attractiveness is, no, it's about behaving like a fucking boor. And it's the cartoon of the usually portrayed as overweight, wearing khaki shorts and America flag apparel and asking about where the nearest McDonald's is and getting mad about the foreign food and complaining about, you know.
I want ketchup on my burger.
Yeah, and like, why don't you, people should speak English everywhere and all that shit, right? Like that, I think that that stereotype is extremely accurate.
I mean, it is and it isn't, right? You know, I've traveled to places where most of the Americans there are respectful of the place that they're in and not assholes. And a couple of them are. So the ugly American stereotype is absolutely true. There are plenty of Americans who are ugly, but not all of them are.
I think too that people may not realize that they may think, oh, I'm not an asshole, therefore I'm not an ugly American. But it's not just that you're an asshole. You can be very polite and very like well-mannered and still not, and still be expecting everyone to speak English, like expecting there to be English on the signs. If you go to a menu, if you go to a restaurant,
not investing any effort into adapting to another culture or to interactions with other people and expecting everyone else to meet you rather than meeting them.
Yep. And that's the thing is I think that I have traveled to other countries with members of my family who would never consider this to be them, who consider themselves, who were very well-mannered and polite, but who, you know, did things like cerveza, por favor, cerveza. Oh, gracias. And it's like, that kind of stuff is kind of all part and parcel of it. Obviously there's shades of it, but I think it's a very fitting description.
I don't disagree. I think it is a fitting description. I think that it is, we're all guilty of it to some extent. Mm-hmm. I'm sure there are times
absolutely
where we want to believe that we're not, but we all make decisions that are disrespectful of the cultures that we're visiting when we're there.
In fact, sometimes you can't help it because you went to a resort and you get to the resort and it's beautiful inside and you realize you are surrounded by abject poverty.
Yeah. So, I mean, we went to Italy and Pat and I tried to be super respectful of the people in Italy, but we didn't speak Italian.
Yeah.
So, you know, the only thing you can do in those situations is try and be super respectful that it's not their fucking fault they don't know English. And mm-hmm. figure out how to make that communication work without making them feel like shit because they don't speak your language.
Exactly.
I feel like a lot of stereotypes, you can say there's a reason for those stereotypes. Not that they're based in truth necessarily, but you can look at stereotypes and be like, oh, people say that because of this.
Mm-hmm.
Or, oh, people say that because, you know, they were demonized by this group and it's bullshit and it's, you know, propaganda or whatever. I think you can look at the ugly American stereotype and you can see where all of that comes from and where all of that is based in reality, not for everyone and not all of it for some people that are guilty of it. But I think you can apply enough of it often enough where it's a stereotype that's, you know, based in reality.
I think we all agree with that.
Yeah.
Question five. What do you think is the main reason why so many offerings in cinema and series tend to appeal to the lowest common denominator instead of trying to appeal to more discerning consumers?
Money.
Oh, yeah. That's because it's not an audience. It's a consumer base. Yeah. It's the same reason they don't kill off characters in comic books. It's because Wolverine isn't a character. Wolverine is a franchise. And if people are going to buy Wolverine comics, you can't kill off Wolverine because he sells books when you put him on the cover. Mm-hmm. It's the same thing with movies. You're selling a movie to as many people as you can.
Yeah. I mean, Transformers is a piece of shit. Yes. Franchise, but it kept making money.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I think too, a lot of it, if you think about it, like movies and cartoons and newspapers, one of the things that they used to, that the aim was for people who had a lower reading level or a lower comprehension level of English to be able to understand them. So at the beginning, maybe of what we consider to be our, you know, popular media, things were pitched in a certain way because it was intended to get the largest consumer base, you know, to get the largest, reach the largest number of people. And unfortunately, the largest number of people is just never going to be discerning. That's the nature of the word discerning, right? It means that you eschew a lot of things that other people glom onto. So I think that there are plenty of, you know, movies and series these days. Luckily, Netflix and Hulu have revolutionized television series and movies to some degree, because a lot of things are getting made that wouldn't have been made before. You've got tons of indie art house, small studio, small, you know, company things that are, and honestly, the era of the blockbuster might be over in a post-COVID, post-Netflix world.
Maybe.
It just may be that there isn't anything like that anymore, and that there isn't a thing where everyone goes and sees a movie July 4th weekend. Like Independence Day when I was younger, that was like, holy shit, everyone went and saw that movie.
And a Marvel movie as last year.
Yep. Yeah. I think
the thing that is difficult to understand or accept for a lot of people who are movie fans and who love movies that aren't necessarily the big blockbusters, you know, or people, hell, like us, where we love fucking Marvel movies because they're fucking awesome. And at the same time, we enjoy movies that are smaller budget, that are indie films, whatever. The thing is, those smaller budget films wouldn't get made if the blockbusters didn't exist, because the studios make tons of money on those blockbusters. And then some of that money goes to movies like The Trial of the Chicago 7.
Right.
Those movies don't exist without the machine that makes the gigantic piles of cash. So, it's a complicated
situation. That's why there has Trolls too.
Yeah. That's why.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much, Skeptic Jackal. We really appreciate it. If you want to send us 5 questions, we would very much appreciate that, because we are down to just 2 more sets of 5 questions. That's it.
No.
The next 2, and one of them we're recording tonight.
Yeah.
So basically next week, we just have the one. So please ask us your 5 questions, literally anything. They don't have to be themed. I've actually talked to people who have been like, oh, I want to send them in, but I can't think of a good theme or a good set of questions. Please don't
need to be.
We don't deserve that. Just send, literally, what's your favorite brand of bread? How many socks do you think you own? I will answer any question.
Yeah.
Any question. I can tell you, if you ask us like questions that are yes or no questions, it's going to be a little bit more boring, but that's also fine.
Well, we'll get through them way faster, except some of these questions tonight have been yes or no questions and we couldn't actually answer just yes or no.
Exactly.
So, true.
Don't put it past us to just absolutely overextemporize whatever it is
on yes or no questions. We could do it. We could do it.
We'll make it happen.
Yeah.
So send those to 5questions@geekswithoutgod.com. That's number 5 questions, or the word 5 questions, because Nick is smart at emails. And then we would love you to rate us wherever you listen to your podcast. If you haven't rated us yet, come on, man, rate us. It'd be great. Additionally, we can be found on Facebook, Twitter, and we usually post there and things. Thank you so much.
We've never been censored for lies.
We have never been censored for lies. I might just start. thank you so much. We support you and love you, and we thank you for supporting and liking us back. See how I didn't say love us? I didn't suggest they love us. I'm not going to assume.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you. We'll see you next week.
Bob Harris 2020. You know what I can't wait for? Talking about the election of 2024. Yes!
We're geeks without God. We don't recognize moral authority. We don't accept divine superiority. We're geeks without God.
Until next time, you can find us blogging and listen to past podcasts at geekswithoutgod.com. And you can follow us on Twitter at geekswithoutgod.
We're geeks. We're geeks. We're geeks without God. We're geeks. We're geeks. We're geeks without God. We're geeks. Geeks without God.
The cat likes to make biscuits on it while he screams.